The following podcast was recorded in my favorite studio, Johnny Flores' barn. There's going to be some horse noises, just to let you know. Enjoy. Welcome to the WOE podcast about horses and horsemanship. I'm John Hare, and you found the place where we talk horses. Today, we're in Acton, California, with AQHA professional horseman Johnny Flores. Johnny Flores came up through the AQHA Young Horse Development Program. He's competed in Mustang makeovers, extreme cowboy races, ranch riding, and versatility. Today, he's going to help Renee with her horse, Max, and give him some tips on horse riding. But first, we're going to find out a little bit more about Johnny Flores. Johnny, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
How did you get your start in horses?
Well, initially, it was my whole family. We kind of dove into horses in the early 2000s. I was still just a little kid. It was definitely really nice growing up around horses as a kid, you know, in kindergarten and then going into elementary school. But I would say that my start actually knowing how to ride and do things properly and learning about horsemanship and, you know, getting my eyes open per se, I think was when I was about 11 years old. I did my first Mustang makeover, and that was just a real pivotal thing to realize I've been doing so much wrong and, you know, how to actually train a horse to do things rather than ride the one you got. And it's just sent me on a total path and competing in EXCA as well as a kid. But it's just snowballed from there, really.
Tell me a little bit about that first Mustang horse that you had.
Well, I was 11, so it was a youth. It was a extreme Mustang makeover. It was in Fort Worth, which in retrospect, I think is hilarious. Having never trained at that level, I'm like, you know what? Let's do the big one. but because I was a youth, I had gotten a little two-year-old, and I named her Mellow Moon. She had a really cool little marking on her forehead that looked like a moon, and she was Mellow, hence the name. And she was just an incredible horse. And she wasn't easy. I'm not going to say that she was easy because she still had her problems. She still dragged me now and again and still... She wasn't the easiest horse in the world to work with, but I feel really blessed to have worked with a horse like her that really allowed me to learn and allowed me to make mistakes and allowed me to, you know, reflect on how I'm doing things and really just my first horse that I'm really training, not one that I just kind of had. And she was incredible. She now lives with a family in Northern California and they do jumping with her, which I think is hilarious because when I first haltered her, she... She didn't exactly like being haltered, and she did a big jump and buck, and being maybe 14 hands tall at the time, really little horse, she jumped so high, my gosh. The talent and the springs in those hooves, it was incredible. I've never seen a horse since jump that high, except maybe hunter jumpers, but yeah, no, she's awesome, and I'm so grateful to God for getting a horse like that.
Was there one pivotal moment or story that kind of epitomizes what she taught you?
She taught me how to be aware. You know, this is a hilarious story. Prior to working with that horse, I had another horse. His name was Itzel. He was an old rental horse, super broke, great horse. And he took care of me. So I really had no, you know, horse sense. Because you don't, when a horse takes care of you, you're just kind of like, whoop-de-doo, da-da-doo. You don't pay attention.
Along for the ride.
And yeah, along for the ride. My aunt and my mom and my brother all used to kind of be like, Johnny, wake up. Come on, you know, like pay attention to things. And that horse taught me so much because she had a habit of, specifically when I wasn't paying attention, just taking a little nibble out of the fat in the back of my arm. I learned to pay attention so quickly. But yeah, I mean, that's probably one of the biggest things I learned was how to wake up.
Tell us a little bit about the AQHA Young Horse Development Program. You went through that. What is it?
Well, it is probably the greatest program in the whole wide world. And, you know, I'm not just saying that. Let me just kind of preface my answer real quick. Prior to that, working with Mustangs and working with rescue horses, working with Appaloosas, with great horses, they're wonderful horses, and there's so much that you can learn from them as a horseman. I think every horseman should work with Mustangs and Appaloosas. You will learn patience. But the opportunities that they have is just sadly not what a quarter horse has. So getting into the Young Horse Development Program and being able to finally get my hands on a quarter horse was just pivotal in my career and my trajectory and everything, because at the time we didn't have the money to have gotten a quarter horse. I had to have to sell a kidney to even have a shot. So it was just such a blessing that it was around, and even more so that I got in. But the program, it is a very, very long process trying to apply for it, and you do have to write essays and you have to get recommendations and all that kind of stuff. It's not an easy application process. However, it's well worth it. You will not regret it. It's a youth program where ranching heritage breeders donate some of their foals to a youth. And it's usually 1 to 2 kids per state in a given year. And usually the program happens in the very end of the year. So you pick up your horse, and then the start of the new year, from January to September, it's a big log, a bunch of assignments that you have to do. And it's all stuff that you would do anyway. It's like a 4-H record book is kind of how I like to explain it, because you'll have to take logs of feed, of veterinary stuff, take logs of what you do with them, your work, your progress. You have video submissions. You have go to a show. You also have a point where you have to go and take a lesson with a professional horseman, or you can call and see if there's a way to work around that. Maybe you have someone who's big and reining. Like for me, I had Patrick Wickenheiser do it. He's an NRHA judge, wonderful trainer, actually like 15 minutes away from me. And even though he's not a pro horseman, still an incredible resource. And, you know, it fosters mentorship with that. And after the project is done in September, you have the opportunity for scholarships. You have the opportunity to be featured in the journal. It's just so, so amazing, because after that, it's your horse.
You get to keep the horse.
Yeah, you get to keep a horse. You get to get this quarter horse and keep it. And it's just, I can't put into words how incredibly just amazing the program is for that. Fact that you get your horse, you know, you have it from then on. You get good horses too. Some people got cutting bred horses. I got a cow horse. Some other people get roping bred horses. You get good horses, and you get mentorship. And, you know, I could just talk for hours and hours about it. But if you have a kid, I just so strongly recommend applying. What have you got to lose? You got nothing to lose and everything to gain from it.
So it's not just about training the horses. You're learning everything about the horse health,
yep.
Horse technology.
Yep.
I'm sure tack gets included in all that stuff as well, too.
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, you get the horse, right? I've pounded that point in. But you get a young horse that you get to train. And it's not that training young horses is easy. It's not. They are still a horse, and they can be challenging. The fact that you get a horse that young, you can do everything with it. So the training experience that you get also, it's like, you know, you get to kind of work out your method. Maybe you've worked at home with Mustangs, Appaloosas, and rescue horses like I had, because that's all at the time that I could get my hands on. But it's like, finally, I got a quarter horse. I can do all these things, and I have all this time before I get to ride, because they give you little foals, little 5, 6, 7, 8-month-year-old foals, the cutest little puffballs in the world. And so you get to really learn the training. That's probably the biggest thing. And second to that is the mentorship. You get connected with professionals, with high-level judges, riders. You basically get in with the whole network. So it's right. Just, it's so invaluable.
And I want to get back to your influences in horsemanship, but I neglected to introduce my wife, which I often do. Renee's here, and Renee came up to learn some techniques and tips about ranch riding. And how did that go today? We've just spent about an hour with Johnny out in the arena. What did you come away with, Renee?
Well, first of all, it was a ton of fun. Thank you, Johnny.
Yeah.
It was very educational. It's kind of exciting. Max is a pretty high-energy horse, a little bit new to me. And I was looking for tips on kind of calming him, slowing him. And Johnny was real helpful with that. With a goal, too, showing ranch riding, which would be really nice if I can get him to lope.
You'll get it.
I will.
Well, and so what things were you working on?
We were working on getting him to listen to me when I wanted to transition to a slower pace. And we did that by working on the fence and doubling. That was a great experience, and trying to get that fine-tuned to do it correctly, giving him the chance to do it right, and then telling him if he didn't do it right. Working on my hands, that was really good. Another part of what we did was bending him to me getting him to slow, to stop, to listen, to give, and to give correctly with his head in a more collected position, getting that flexibility through the neck and the pole. It was really good.
And Johnny, what did you see from your side as a trainer?
Well,
is this a common problem that people struggle with?
Yeah, I think that there are definitely no shortage of hotter horses. Having experienced my Appaloosa, my gosh, the stereotype about Arabians being hot, you should see this horse. the gas tank on him is incredible, and especially despite his age. But so it was kind of funny watching Renee have very similar problems to what I had. It was very, very familiar. And it was really interesting because I could help her very, very well because I knew these problems very intimately. But it's also different because that horse had a roping background, whereas my horse was the epitome of a problem horse that I had to just from ground zero. So certain things that maybe took a little bit of a firmer hand, they weren't working as well for Renee's horse, so we had to switch to simpler ways of kind of doing things. And, you know, changing the tone as you speak is how I like to put it. But no, our horse is really, really good. He's just ready to run. We just need to take that out of him a bit. But he's a good boy.
So are you working a lot in ranch riding now?
Yeah, that's mainly been my focus as of late is ranch riding and ranch trail. I really like the ranch trail, to be quite honest. The obstacles are always such a blast. And especially taking it a little bit slower, I really enjoy that.
And there's a vaquero influence in your horsemanship. How does that play a role in your training methods and the clinics that you offer?
The way that I really learned how to train a horse to slide and change leads and spin and do like the higher level of things in my training, I think was very much developed when I dove into the vaquero training, reading old Hackamore books, trial and error with my first few horses, talking to my mom, my brother, different horsemen. So it's something that I think is very much in me and I'll never be able to escape per se, and not that I'm trying, but it's there. I think that with the vaquero horsemanship, a lot of it's very big on balance. A lot of it is very big on taking your time, and both of those things I did a lot with my with the horse I'm showing a lot in ranch riding. The first 2 years riding her, I had no intention of showing. I was Mr. Vaquero training Little Miss Bridle Horse. I'm like, this is, you know, I'm going to make this horse like all the old Arnold Rojas books, you know, just in my head about it. So the fact that I took so darn long to train and I had no intention of like rushing things, I think helped a lot. And the prioritization of balance has really helped her too, because she does these trail courses seamlessly and quicker than a lot of the other horses, because she's just like, dude, I can lope upside down if you want me to. I'm so darn balanced.
Johnny, are you trying to tell me that you learned vaquero horsemanship from a book?
For the most part, yes. I think a lot of that stuff was very self-taught, because nowadays with horsemanship revolving around showing and the commodification of horsemanship, the old school vaquero approach of taking as long as you need, you know, you'll get your horse in a bridle by the time they're 10 versus standards that call for horses to be in bridles by the time they're 5. That style of horsemanship is such a minority. It's rather difficult to kind of learn that one-on-one, like you might with ranch riding, cow horse reining, things that are more popular, and things that really drive the market. Reading the book Hackamore Reinsman, I had studied it with my mom, and it's a lovely book, a little bit hard to understand. You may have to go on some forums on Facebook and try to decipher it, message some people. But there's a lot of trial and error with my first couple horses. The next horse that you train is always better than the one before it. So I learned from all the mistakes with my first horse. And when I got the young horse development horse, I was like, okay, I know what I got to do. And at the time, my brother was training on our property and I was starting the colts, putting miles on them. So I would kind of work out little things here and there, like working out the kinks, so to speak. And so by the time I got to my other horse, I already had an understanding of teaching the slide, teaching lead changes, teaching spins, and all the other basic maneuvers. But I think that a lot of the polishing and refinement definitely came from attending clinics, attending lessons, finding people that are better than me to go and watch me and say, what the heck are you doing? Because, you know, riding alone is not the greatest way to improve.
And what are some of the horse trainers that you trained under or took clinics from that had an impact on your horsemanship?
I've just attended a ton of clinics and tried to go wherever I could. I've gone to bridle horse clinics with Bruce Sandifer. He's Mr. Vaquero. That guy's horses are amazing. And it was really neat to talk to him about some things and sort of get some kinks straightened out on my other horse and the finer bits of the Hackamore stuff. But reading different books has helped a lot. I haven't had all that many coaches, but when I was getting started with cow horse, I had Sonny McCormick. She was helping me a lot in the beginning of that, teaching my horse how to follow a flag, teaching my horse how to accept the snaffle, because at the time, Mr. Vaquero, I wasn't using a snaffle very much on her. But right now I'm training with Rory Rich in Temecula, and we're trying to sharpen up some things for the VRH World Show coming up. But hopefully I can have more people, you know, look at me and give me some critiques.
Where is that World Show going to be?
The World Show is in Amarillo in Texas, and it's the beginning of June. So it'll be pretty hot, but it'll be awesome. I'm excited.
Is the Garrocha part of the Vaquero training program?
Yeah, so the Vaquero tradition is a very interesting thing because, you know, it's a lot like English, like how English has roots in Latin, and that language is so darn old, right? So you could trace the Vaquero tradition so far back, just like the language we're speaking right now. And you could trace it to the time of Jesus and before the Ottoman Empire, the Moorish conquest of Spain, all these different things. But in Spain, they used the lances and they used the garrochas to work cattle. So there was a big influence in the different maneuvers and the maneuverability of a horse to be able to do those things from a military standpoint with lances, swords, and jousts and things like that. And then a stockmanship perspective more, using it to work the wild bulls. You know, in Spain, they work with cattle that want to kill them, not like the American cattle that are like, ah! So it's not a good idea to tether yourself to them like us American cowboys. So they use the sticks kind of more defensively. And if you look up the Doma Vaquera style of riding, it's beautiful. But when they brought it over and the missions in California was, I mean, where all the Vaquero stuff had started, there was definitely an influence, but they quickly realized that using a rope would be better. And then the creation of La Riata, Lariat, Lasso, all those different versions of ropes kind of came to be.
How do you use the Garrocha in your training program? I mean, I've seen demonstrations with Doma Vaquera horsemanship, but I mean, what is the Garrocha used for when you're actually training a horse?
Well, I cannot speak for the Doma Vaquera riders. I think that as far as the practical applications, speaking to them would probably give you a more complete answer. But in my personal program, I'm not trying to find bullfighting bulls.
Right,
I'm trying
to
work a cow on a fence. It's a little different, but the way that I usually use it is as a tattletale. When you're doing circles, for the longest time, I couldn't see in geometry, and I always make fun of my brother because he used to do reining, so he could just, you know, look at an arena and see circles and follow them, and they were perfect. And I was like, I don't know how you do that. So using a Garrocha was a very good focal point, and I'll do it with my greener horses just to kind of say, hey, do your circles still suck, or are they getting better? But it's also just a wonderful demonstration tool to use. And I think it changes things up, you know. I think that we get caught up in a rhythm with our horses. And how would you like to eat pasta every night for dinner?
Right.
You eventually want to have a grilled cheese or something, my gosh. So I think it changes up the pace for them. And if nothing else, it looks pretty darn cool.
It does. It looks very, very cool.
Thank you.
You give clinics here at your ranch.
Yep.
And what is the focus of those? What can someone expect when they come to a Johnny Flores clinic?
Well, I think that there are a lot of Vaquero undertones to the things that I teach. I'm, you know, like I said, that's not something that I'm going to be able to leave because it's something that is so ingrained in me and how I understand horsemanship. So I think that you may get some old school perspectives. But, you know, good horsemanship is good horsemanship, right? And I think specifically with ranch horse, because ranch horse, it's not as specific, I think, as something like reining or cutting, that I think that anyone can come to one of my clinics and walk out of there knowing how to compete a ranch horse or just knowing how to help their horse to lope better, like Renee. You know, I try to meet my clinic participants where they're at, but I mean, if it's up to me, I would love to do more ranch horse clinics, more Vaquero clinics. That's my personal interest, at least.
And are you looking forward to traveling to do clinics as well?
Yes, I am. I am both very excited and slightly terrified, as these things tend to be.
Those are both two good signs, right?
For sure. You know, if If I'm not stressed, I'm not excited enough.
That's right.
But no, there's an amazing ranch horse clinic that I'll be doing in Missouri in May. And then I have another clinic here in my property. And I'm just super excited to get those going. And I have a Vaquero clinic, Vaquero Horsemanship, in New York in June, right after the VRH World Show. So, you know, I'm just eagerly waiting for those to come around.
Very exciting.
Can't get here quick enough. But.
Yeah, the days are taking too darn long.
I like to ask this of all the trainers that I interview for the show. In your experience, is there one thing that you see the recreational horsemen continue to struggle with or a mistake that they make that could easily be fixed if they had a different approach to their horse?
Yes, totally. I joke around that I was a terrible student, which is why I think I'm a good teacher, because I have every trick in the book. But one thing that I think rather recently, only a couple of years ago, that I finally really understood, I didn't know how good of a horse trainer I was. I don't mean that in an arrogant way, but I didn't know how much I knew until I finally just embraced the boring. You know, horsemanship is so darn boring for a lot of days, and it's slow, and, you know, got to listen to some music to get by. But once you realize how valuable the slow stuff, the walking, the boring stuff, frankly, is, you'll learn to embrace the boring so you could engage in the cool every now and again.
I think when Renee and I went to Las Vegas to watch Andrea Frappani and Nick Dowers, mm-hmm. I think that was a little bit of Nick's philosophy, is coming down and meeting the horse where he's at, because he's
For
got
sure.
a lot slower clock than most of us have.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And you know, with the Vaquero horsemanship and getting more involved in the show world, you know, learning the more cowpuncher standards. And for the listeners who may not know, cowpuncher is basically cowboys Texas, then east of that. They ride the snaffle bits and the curb bits, split reins. That's the traditional cowboy you see nowadays. There are all these different styles. And I think that, you know, the Vaquero style, it's got its pluses and minuses, but for sure, taking time, and, you know, disregarding the show world and just taking the time you need to work on that horse, even if it takes forever, you know, slow is fast in the end, isn't it?
Right, right. And one other thing I was fascinated about when I was doing research for the podcast, you've ridden in the finals of the Mustang Makeover, Extreme Cowboy Racing, Ranch Horse competitions. Or was there something that happened at one of them that you could tell us a little bit about?
Yeah. With the Mustang Makeover, unfortunately, I didn't ride because I was still a youth. So it was on the ground, even though that horse was probably broke enough for me to hop on anyway. Coolest little horse in the world. But, you know, probably one of the cooler things that's happened more recently, I would say, was the West Coast Ranch Horse Rendezvous. It's a big show in Temecula, California, big ranch horse show. It's like 4 days, and it's just the coolest show. West Coast Ranch Horse does such a beautiful job. The facility's amazing. The people are wonderful. If you guys have time this coming year in October, go head down and hang out. It's just awesome. But there was a freestyle in the evening on one of the days. I believe it was Saturday. And the freestyle was an open freestyle, and, you know, you can do kind of whatever you want, but, you know, hit these certain maneuvers. And I went and I took my horse and I was like, I want to do this. So I pestered Sean and Jenny, they're the ones that run it, and they said I could do it. And we did the theme of the Magnificent Seven, because, I mean, who doesn't know that movie? Right. Such an awesome movie. And I dressed in all black, trying to pretend I was Yul Brynner. I didn't shave my head. My commitment didn't go that far. It was funny because there were a lot of little theatrics. Like, I had a gun and I was shooting towards the window. And then at one point I had a flask and I pretended to get drunk during my spins. it was just a total blast. And then we even had a mannequin, which was basically some of my old clothes stitched together to look like a person filled with more old clothes that doesn't even fit me. And I dragged it because I was dragging a body out, and it exploded, which I thought was hilarious. The stitches came undone, the clothes went everywhere. But that was such an awesome experience. I feel like that was probably the first time that I felt my horse with me. You know, riding horses, anyone who's ridden horses long enough will know what it feels like when you have a horse that's like you know, if the ranch was on fire and I had to evacuate horses, I had to evacuate cattle, I can get on this horse and I can go and it'll look like a scene from a movie. You know, that kind of like grit and willingness and like, I got you, dude. Yep. That sort of feeling, I think, was probably the first time that I've truly really felt that in my horse. Kind of a coming into her own, which was pretty neat because she's still young and she still does baby things. But to feel that, you know, her gritting her teeth with me was pretty darn cool.
Wow, that's nice. Amazing.
Yeah.
Very cool.
We ended up winning too, which was a neat plus.
Well, and you have a great social media presence. You have a YouTube channel.
Yes, sir.
With a lot of great information that you offer to people. Are all those free?
I try to put out a lot of free information. I think in some ways the clinician market is really oversaturated and there are a lot of copycats. So, you know, giving out free information I think is probably better than putting all of it behind a paywall. And the biggest thing too, having been someone that learned through trial and error reading books, I can tell you, it sucks. So I don't want people to have to go through that. So while I may not have as many videos towards maybe ranch horse, I try to put out a lot with regards to hackamore training and just good horsemanship. And I try to put, you know, the complete picture. Because when I was learning and I'd watch videos, all the RFD TV guys, all the other top names, all the Road to the Horse competitors, they all have clinic websites and things like that. It always felt like they give you, you know, 3/4 of the information and the rest is behind a paywall. And I'm like, well, darn it, I want that little bit because this 3/4 isn't working. So I try to put out as much free information as I can to help the people that are pulling themselves up by the bootstraps.
I think it's a really smart strategy because when you do that, you bring up all the people, like you say, that may not be able to afford access to all the information behind a paywall. And as they get better, then chances are they start to seek you out for more hands-on opportunities.
And is for somebody to get that information, go use it on their horse, and get good results. Gosh, that's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah,
for sure.
For somebody who's not a professional to see improvement, to see a change that you've created yourself from something that you've learned from somebody like you.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot right now. Showing, I have a few lessons, I have some clinics, I film videos, all this and that. But my love is really clinics. If God said, Johnny, what do you want to do? I'd say nothing else, just let me do some clinics. I like that the most, and I feel like giving out that free information is almost like a demo, so right. to speak, of what I do without, you know, having people on the hook for paying for a clinic or things like that, to where, you know, as a young horse trainer, I think that that's probably the most efficient way to get out there, honestly.
Absolutely.
Internet's amazing in that way.
And so what is your YouTube channel?
My YouTube channel, Johnny Flores Horses, that's the same name for my Facebook, for my TikTok, for my Instagram. Generally, my Facebook, I would say, probably has the most in the way of articles. It also has a lot of my videos, but my YouTube, with the amount of videos that I have on there, I don't have a humongous YouTube, but, you know, the videos that you find on there, I like to think that they're about as much information as I can condense in there.
Right. That's great. And is there anything else you want to add?
Well, I'm thinking of, and I'm trying to work towards it, eventually publishing an ebook on hackamore principles. Again, tying into the point about, you know, figuring it out yourself kind of sucks. There have been a lot of things that you pick up from reading books, but then also having someone watch you being like, what are you doing? And then going to see someone else and be like, I can't believe they told you that. So I think that I have a good view of what, like if I had to tell you, Renee, right now, and you said, I want to work with a hackamore, and I were to say, okay, here's what you need to do so that you, for lack of a better phrase, don't screw it up. And keep your horse light, keep him happy. So I'll be publishing that soon, so keep an eye out for that, guys.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Thank you.
Well, Johnny, this has been a lot of fun. I understand that you have some clinics coming up in May.
Yes, like I said earlier, the one in Missouri, but I also have one here at my property in Acton, California, May 25th and May 26th. They are currently full and there's a waiting list, but, you know, there's tons of room for auditors. I love to have people come and audit. You know, your guys' questions might be a rider's question that helps them too, so come on down.
Yeah, and that might be a great way just to get to know you. I find auditing a clinic is a great way to see if that trainer's personality fits with the way I learn. Because face it, we all learn a little bit differently, right?
Yeah.
Just like the horse. So it's a little bit lower cost and you get to get the feel for the trainer.
A preview.
Yeah, like a trial.
Yeah, exactly. Like a first date. I might cut that out. So people can find you on all sorts of social media. We really appreciate you having us over to your place here in Acton, and we wish you all the best in the future.
Thank you. This
has been and Max great. And I thank you, too.
You're very welcome.
Renee, that was quite a bit of fun traveling to Acton, California, and getting a lesson with Johnny Flores. He's a very impressive young horseman.
It was a lot of fun, and he really is. He's just a great young man.
And so the listeners know, it's good to be back here for a special episode of the WOW Podcast.
A while.
Yeah, it has been. After nearly 20 years, Renee lost her horse, Dusty, last Christmas, and she got a new horse. His name's Max. He's 13 years old. And with any new partner, it takes a little time getting used to. So one of the things we wanted to accomplish with this trip was to give her an opportunity to get a one-on-one lesson with a really good trainer to see if Renee and Max could build a stronger bond. How did you think that went, Renee?
Well, I thought it went pretty well. Johnny's a great teacher. He was very patient. What I wanted to learn were some techniques for slowing Max down. He was a rope horse, and I'd like to make him into a more casual trail riding type of horse. I was looking for ways to slow him down on the trail without having to crank on a bit all the time. Johnny was great with that. He had experience with a horse like that. He was very helpful. He gave me a couple of techniques to try out. We've been using them out on the trail and think that they're working out pretty well.
And how did you find Johnny Flores as a trainer?
He was really great. He's very patient. Even the fourth time he corrected you, he stayed very calm and pleasant about it. He explained things really well. It was fun being able to try something, have him there watching and give you feedback right at the time. That was very helpful.
Did you think Max improved during the lesson?
I think he did. Now, I don't know if it was being tied to the trailer for a couple of hours, but he did seem to calm down, work a little bit better in the arena, and even doing some of the things that Johnny had me trying with him kind of slowed his mind down, and that's what I was looking for.
I think that anytime you can go to a trainer and get some useful tools that you can put into practice right away, that's a valuable trip.
It was very valuable, and we have used some of those techniques out on the trail already, and they're very helpful. And Johnny's mom, Raquel, is pretty cool, too.
That'll do it for this episode. Thanks to Johnny Flores Horses for inviting us to Acton, California. He's got a great place out there where he works horses and holds clinics. He's got a couple of clinics coming up in May. To find out more about Johnny Flores and his horsemanship clinics, check out Johnny Flores Horses on both Facebook and Instagram. He also goes by Johnny Flores Horses on his YouTube channel. There's a lot of valuable information he has made available. You can find every episode of the podcast at wowpodcast.com. Also, you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere else fine podcasts are heard. If you've got an idea for a future podcast, email me at john@wowpodcast.com. Thanks again for listening. And until next time,
go have some fun with your horses.
Bye-bye, everybody.